You are listening to a podcast from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.
Well, I've taken 3 bullets out in Basra, and I was an officer. I'm not like an infantryman, and they haven't looked after me at all. Not one bit. I feel sorry for the guys that I'm not being condescending, that aren't as well educated as I am, because a lot of them don't know how to handle it. They don't. They haven't got a clue. You know, I haven't gone mad or anything like that. I'm just disappointed with the way we've been looked after by the state, you know. You can't starve in Camden, I'll give you that much. There's loads of kind people around here. You get endless cups of coffee, food like these people, but even like Poppy's fish and chips come out at night when they're closing down. They bring, you know, cold. You cannot starve here, but it's when it's rainy or wet, and people get depressed, and a lot of them have got drug problems. You know, it's pretty bad, really.
I very clearly remember a day from back in 2014 when I went to meet one of my colleagues from Camden Community Radio called Tosh. He had been off the radar for a couple of weeks, and then we'd gotten an email from him saying that he had been made homeless. When our station manager spoke to him on the phone, she found out that he was being held in a day centre for homeless people on Hilltop Road. I went to meet him, and we sat on a bench together in the sun outside. He had been in there for a few days by then, sleeping on kitchen chairs mostly, he said. They were sending him to Manchester in the morning to be reunited with his brother. He didn't want to go, but the only other option he had was the streets. I've been speaking to some of the many, many homeless people in Camden about their experiences of the system that is in place to help. Maybe it shouldn't have come as a surprise to learn that there are rules in place around who can and who cannot access help among the homeless. I met Tommy one evening sitting crouched in a doorway outside Camden Town Tube. He was young, with dreadlocks tied in a knot on his head, with a feather sticking out the top of them.
I've been on and off for like 7 years. This time I've been on the street solid for like 2 years now. I've been here in Camden for like since June 2015, and it's now like September 2016. And in that time, like, so in June 2015, when the Camden Council saw me and my brother, they told us that there's nothing they can do for us. We have no local connection. All they can do is like get us a ticket back to where we're from, and that's it. But we knew that if you're in the area for 6 months, then you gain a local connection. So, and we didn't want to leave, and we were staying around. Certain police officers and a certain few Camden Council wardens were, every time they would see us, they were constantly trying to get is to just leave, doing anything they can. They were trying to get an injunction against me and my brother to ban us from the whole of the Camden Borough. So they weren't gonna do anything for us. But in April they scrapped the idea. I'm not too sure why, possibly because there was quite a lot of people on mine and my brother's side, like, you know, writing to them, emailing, contact with them, saying like, what the fuck, you can't, you know, what's going on. They offered us, like, they said that one of us could get in a holding bed and the other one would get put in a temporary bed in, like, Croydon or somewhere. But then that would be a whole different borough, a whole different council. So if we had done that, once whoever had gone to the Croydon place, Camden would just forget all about them because it's not their problem anymore. It's not a simple case of, oh, I'm off the street now, cool, I can get on with my life. No, I can't, because I ain't leaving my brother. I ain't leaving my dog on the street. He's my only family. He's the only person I have. But they don't see it like that. They see it as just being awkward. When a person gets verified as homeless, like, if they have no connection, that 6 month period, the council, I think, and the police, they're just hoping that, you know, the person's just gonna like fuck off anyway, like just disappear. And then because they don't, which we didn't, the council have to do something about it.
Tommy's experience was that if Camden Council know that you are sleeping rough, but do not consider that you have any connection to the borough, they will not offer you access to their services. This is a rule that's shared by every borough in London and by every council across the country, the need for what's called a local connection. There's two main arguments behind the local connection rule. Firstly, people from the local area should be prioritised. Secondly, it's felt that there is more of a chance of successfully getting someone off the streets in an area that they are connected to, where there are people they know or could re-establish contact with that could act as a support network. Which all makes sense in theory, but in practice, the rule often results in standoffs between homeless people and the local authority. And in these cases, its main purpose seems to be to prevent too many people accessing, and therefore overloading, homeless services in the area. If you are deemed by the council to be eligible for Camden's help, then the outreach team will refer you to a hostel or other appropriate service in the borough. This can happen quickly, often it does. But there are rules and regulations in place here as well, and you can find yourself stuck in a stalemate over technicalities that last for months. And that's what happened with Kieran, who I met one day in the summer. He had just been let into a hostel, but before that he was homeless in Camden for a year. It started after he split up with his girlfriend, and ended up with him sleeping in Regent's Park. He felt safer at night behind the locked gates than out on the street, and Kieran's a veteran.
I've seen two tours of Afghanistan. I did 15 years in the army, and I've come out, and I've got a PTSD, I've got a mental health problem where I can't be all right, next minute I get really down, and I've got no support there for me. There's nothing there to help me. I don't know, it's crazy, it really is. It's a bad situation to be in. Because I was sleeping in Regent's Park, they wouldn't help me. They said, oh, we can't come. Well, I said, I'll meet you outside the park. They went, no, you're in the park, you need to be bedding down on the street. And I'm saying, well, that's not making sense.
Did they really? So what? That was literally what they
yeah,
said?
Yeah, that's what they said to me.
They said, move on to the
move on to the street, or bed down in somewhere where we can find you. And I'm saying, I don't do that because it makes me more vulnerable. I tried telling them about my PTSD, and they still went, no. It's not acceptable. So,
was it always the same person, or did you speak to a few people?
But it's always the same regime what they had. But they're very good at passing the book on. And what else I noticed, when I rung up mental health, you know, mental health charities, they never got back to me. When I told them I was an ex-soldier, I'm suffering from PTSD, there's just no resources there because there's been so much cutbacks. It's not there no more. It's not there. They're looking at homelessness now, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's not just that people with drug problems or drink problems, it's happening to everyone now because the way the government's making our people live, they're targeting the wrong people as well, the vulnerable people, and they're pushing them into the homelessness. It's a mess, it really is, it's a mess. There should be more help, for people. It's not just right for ex-soldiers, but for everyone who fits in that category, who needs it, and it's like in mental health. They've cut so much mental health. Some of these guys can't even get appointments. Can't get this. You know, yesterday I met a girl and her son living on the streets, and I thought that's bad. Do you know, all right, son and mum living on the streets. Do you know, it's bad.
While I was researching for this programme, I decided to go back to the Centre for the Homeless on Hilldrop Road, where I'd met my colleague Tosh back in 2014. It's an old church building that glares down at you from the top of a hill. It's run by No Second Night Out, which is a pan-London organisation that acts as a first stop for getting people off the streets. Outside the front door, there was a group sitting around chatting when I walked up. They were in a sort of bus shelter that was half swallowed by ivy. One of them was thin, with short white hair, and he spoke with a bright voice. He said he'd be happy to talk to me if I gave him time to roll a cigarette. While I waited, one of the boys in the bus shelter had missed the ivy, leaned back in his chair, and made a suggestive comment about the size of my feet. Me and my guide, Richard, walked around the corner of the building and sat on a wall. As we talked, I kept noticing his very blue and calm eyes.
So how did you get referred to this place?
Last night, someone asked me my name and my date of birth whilst I was sleeping behind the Adelphi. And this morning when I went to Connections in Charing Cross, they referred me to a housing officer, which never turned up, but a beautiful person called Eva said she found a place for me and said, wait there. And a couple of hours later, I was put in a limousine, I call it. It was a cab. And brought here to wherever I am. Where am I? No Second Night Out.
Yeah, on Hilldrop Crescent.
There we go.
Yeah. So what's your experience been of the hub?
Formal, as in forms.
That's all right.
No, there'll be another word. You just have to... You see, a pause or a silence is an indication you're thinking, and it's important to respect. We shouldn't be so fast.
Understood. Okay.
Let's say... the reason I say formal is whilst I was being interviewed, it's called an assessment, which I call an ASS. S meant. You got it. And it took about 2 hours. And there is a reason that the English Empire rose, and the as a rose, as a flower, and the English Empire wilted. And the reason it wilted was formality and filling in forms. And so I suppose the other word I'm looking for is wilting or impoverished or perhaps emaciated. It's not a place of luxury, joy, or shall we say potential or dreams or do's. It's a place to make do, to just fix up, but not correct.
Okay, cool. No, well, that turned into a very good answer. Yeah, thanks.
Now, may I add something?
Yes.
Homelessness is a result of a cause or an action. Or perhaps a loss, or it is a story. Oh no, it's not really. A story is made up, but really, it's a real something has really happened to someone, and that is what should be looked at. And what you're looking at in these places is an attempt at the cure. But if you are being poisoned, and you find something that which stops the poison, but in fact you don't stop the injection of the poison. All you're doing is neutralizing the effect. And actually, when you stop neutralizing the poison, the poison comes back.
Camden Safer Streets team is employed by Camden Council to identify newly homeless people and help connect them to the services they need to get off the streets. If you end up on the streets in Camden, then they will most likely be the first contact you have with the official system. Ian Bangi is head of the Safer Streets team, and he's been working with the homeless in Camden for years.
We work with people on the street. So our bread and butter, what we are judged on, I suppose, is street homelessness and the outcomes that we can get for the street homeless. Now, we're seeing year-on-year increases. If you look at the numbers we saw in 2010, this is different individuals rough sleeping on the streets of Camden. In 2010, it was about 300. Last year, it was 600. So you can see that's a 100% increase in 5 years. And even though last year was very, very busy, this year is even busier. We have to look at the demographic as well, the makeup of the different people who are out there. About 3 or 4 years ago, about a third of the people rough sleeping in Camden had a Camden connection. That's now less than 10%. Because we've put those guys away. The people on the streets generally now have no connection to this borough, and they're coming from all over the UK and abroad.
Okay, so I should go back a step maybe and ask more about Camden Safer Streets team, and so exactly what you do and how you help people that you find rough sleeping.
Okay, we're out 7 days a week, 5-6 o'clock in the morning, trying to identify those rough sleepers, where they are. We work on what we know about where people are rough sleeping, but also reports from members of the community, those who work and live in Camden, all that stuff. We'll go out then and target those individuals, and we'll assess them, and come up with an offer, which is not just appropriate, but sustainable for them.
So what's the assessment involve? What does that mean?
Okay, we'll be looking at their support needs. But we'll start off with why are they on the street in the first place? And as I say, every individual's got a different story to tell.
So it's a conversation that you have with them?
That's right.
Yeah.
And if they say they're from Manchester, we'll check with Manchester Services. Their background, make sure they have got a connection there and what's available to them, and then we can come back to them and say, okay, fine, we can put you on a train or whatever, there'll be these people waiting for you in Manchester, do you want to do it? And if so, reconnect them that way. Sometimes it'll be going out with mental health services, another street med, it's like a nurses' own physical health, to go out and assess people as well, to make sure that the offer we're giving them is one that suits their needs.
So when you do find someone, and so now you're saying that about 90% of the people on Camden, rough sleeping in Camden, don't have a Camden connection.
Correct.
So there's a lot of people that you can't really help beyond taking them, beyond offering them to go back to where they do have a connection. But presumably the reason that they're staying in Camden is they don't want to do that.
Mm.
So what do you do in that situation when you're seeing the same people out night after night?
Okay, we explain to them the risks they're undertaking. We explain to them the damage that this is doing to their health. You know, the average life expectancy of someone in London rough sleeping last year was 48, 39 for a woman. That's lower than a third world country at war, you know? So it is a very, very hard life. And we will make sure that we're not just giving them a ticket to go somewhere, we're giving them a ticket to go somewhere where they have got accommodation, where they have got services that they need. We wouldn't reconnect someone to go back rough sleeping. We would find something for them at the other end. If they don't accept that, well, you know, there may be some reasons why they wouldn't. If they're running away from violence, for instance, including domestic violence, if they can prove that to us, we'll house them in Camden. Because we're not going to send them back to the arms of the abuser. But if Camden housed every single rough sleeper that turned up from the whole of the UK, well, we'd be full in a couple of days, wouldn't we?
Yeah. I mean, I guess we would... Yeah, I guess I can see that, yeah, there's the hostels. There isn't room for everyone that's sleeping rough. But at the same time,
those with Camden connections, we're very, very lucky in Camden. We have what we call pathways, which is the hostels dotted all over the borough, and what they can offer is sufficient to the needs of Camden. I'm happy to say. So, if I saw you tomorrow and you had a Camden connection, I could put you in a holding area tonight, so that we could assess you properly and refer you into a hostel. So. If I find you rough sleeping for the first time, you don't spend a second night out.
But is there something else that could be done for these people that don't have the Camden connection, do you think? It seems to me slightly archaic in sending people back simply due to a place where they were born or where they lived. If a man comes from Manchester, couldn't you say, well, he doesn't want to come back to Manchester, but we'll send you the bill? Or couldn't there be a different system in place rather than having to send people back to places that they...
I live in Bromley. I'd rather live in Kensington than Chelsea, but I'm not going to get that opportunity. It's like that. Absolutely not. I mean, Camden as a borough would not be able to cope if we took everybody that just said, I want to live in Camden now, please.
Okay.
It's the same with every borough.
No, I understand
and
that.
And if you've got a Camden connection and you're rough sleeping in Manchester, they want to send you back to Camden.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Okay, it might be a silly question, but if it's someone who's sleeping rough, what's usually the biggest obstacles for them turning their life around?
The biggest obstacle for them turning their life around is something called shame. Yeah, I'm talking about the emotion that is all about you. Yeah, it doesn't take very long for someone to become entrenched and stop accepting offers of accommodation or reconnection, and that people believe is because the amount of shame that people carry with them means that. It's very, very difficult for them to think themselves worthy enough to be able to do something about the situation, no matter what support they're given. And it does glue people to the streets. They say that people get entrenched, so to speak, after only about 3 to 4 weeks. After 3 to 4 weeks, of course, they survived. They know where the free food is or whatever. They've got themselves a sleeping bag and so on. But the shame itself means that when we come along and say, hey, you know, if you do this, that, and the other, we'll help you and you can get off your feet, they'll think, no, I can't. Yeah. So that's the biggest barrier, really.
What conclusions can I draw from the conversations I have been having with the homeless in Camden, the voluntary organisations that help them, and the Camden officials? Ian Bangi's view that the biggest obstacle for someone getting off the street is overcoming their own sense of shame has some truth to it, I think. It mirrors what Richard, who I met at No Second Night Out, told me, that homelessness is the result of something that has poisoned a person's life, and until the root of that poison is found, it is hard, maybe impossible, to get them off the street. The poison could be a loss, an addiction, a traumatic incident, something in the past that just can't be faced. But there is also truth in the fact that the system is set up in a way that is sometimes hard to justify. Rules like the need for a local connection, or needing to bed down in the same place in order to be verified as homeless, might make sense in theory, but they often make no sense in an individual's case. Whether it is deliberate or not, the chief beneficiary of these rules often turns out to be the local authority, as they reduce the number of people that they have to care for. As the numbers of homeless people living on the streets in Camden continues to rise and rise, it is time that we looked at how the system that exists to help them operates, and ask ourselves, is this fair? This is not a question just for those involved in the homeless sector, or for the council, but for all of us. It is a question about how we view and treat some of the worst off people in our society.
You're listening to a download from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.